5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You done fell right down that rabbit hole, so reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder mayhem tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Punk, and their dog Ninja.
And sometimes their cat Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 305 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, as usual, we want to give thanks to our men and women and service animals of our allied forces and our civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks for everything you do.
Yeah, especially, you know, we're celebrating Memorial Day weekend. We really do know what it's about. And we just want to tell you that we keep praying for you guys every day. Thank you for having our backs and God bless you.
Yeah, some have definitely given the ultimate sacrifice. And
definitely.
We thank those who have went before us to give us the freedom that we have now. Also, we know that times are extremely tough right now for a lot of people. Unfortunately, the news is never good. We had the horrible mass shooting last week in Texas of the school children. I just saw there was another shooting in Tulsa, Oklahoma today at a Memorial Day festival. I think it happened late last night, early this morning. It's just everywhere you turn, there's bad news, and it can definitely take its toll on people. And I definitely don't have the answers on how to fix these problems. I think a lot of people think they've got the answers, but to be honest with you, I don't think one side is completely right. I don't think one side is completely wrong. I think it's going to take everybody pulling together to fix these problems. However that may happen. Like I said, I don't have the answers. I just know it's going to take all of us united to fix these problems that we have going on in the country.
That's very true. And, you know, you saying that, I would like to just have a moment of silence for about 10 or 15 seconds, please, and just so we can give respect.
Okay, Tracy, if you're struggling right now, anybody out there that just needs somebody to talk to, give us a call, give somebody a call, go to the group, talk to somebody there, just talk to somebody. You know, that's all we're saying, talk to somebody. And if you don't feel comfortable talking with us or talking in the group, call a friend, call a neighbor, call a family member, or who else can they call, Tracy?
They can call the hotline number at 1-800-273-8255. You can also text at 741-741. I'm also going to add to that, we asked you guys to call us and talk to us. Also, if somebody's posting something like this person did on Facebook and said what he was going to do, you need to take that serious. And always report it, no matter what. If somebody's telling you they're going to do this, if somebody, whatever, don't even take the chance. You call somebody and you tell them, because this is a sad, sad thing. And just to know that somebody can actually do this to anybody in the world, much less small kids, it's just heartbreaking. So, you know, please, you know, like I said, if you see something like that somewhere on Facebook or any other social media, just, you know, don't even take a chance. Just go ahead and report it. It could save somebody's life.
I agree 100%. All right. I know that's a tough transition to get into this stuff, but, you know, that's the real world we live in. And unfortunately, bad stuff happens on a regular basis. And
yep.
Hopefully we can use this next hour or so to just get away from the bad news for a minute.
All righty.
All right, Tracy, I wanted to do some stories from Canada tonight, because it's been a while since we've done a Canadian story, and Canada actually is the country that has the second most listens other than the United States.
No way. No. Well, thank you guys.
And then you've got Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Australia. So,
that's amazing. It's just, I don't even know what to say about that. It's just hard to believe. I think it's funny because people in like Great Britain and Australia hear our accents, and I don't even I can't even imagine what they say about it, but we appreciate y'all so much.
I've got two stories for you. One is way longer than the other, but they tie in together. Our stories actually take place in Alberta, Canada, more specifically Calgary, home of the Calgary Flames.
Very cool. I have a cousin named Alberta.
Yes, you do. Anyway, this might seem strange right off the bat, but there are two super popular bars in Calgary
mm-hmm.
that used to be funeral homes.
Oh, whoa.
And are not really that far from each other. And I'll tell you how I know this in a little bit. It has to do with a phone call that I made to Canada. Anyways, there was a bunch of confusion on this story, and I'll tell you about it as we get into it. But I had to write the story, some of it, and I had to rewrite some of it. Anyways, let me just say, when you write a book, you should give names of bars or whatever you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, especially when you're talking about multiple, so you don't confuse people. Anyways, some of this was my fault. Probably most of it, as we'll put. Luckily for us, both of these bars are haunted. So we have stories for both. But like I said, one's got a lot more stories than the other. So we're going to start with the one that has the most hauntings of the two, the Cat and Fiddle Pub. Actually, the Cat in Fiddle Pub.
Oh, that's a cool name.
So it's apostrophe in apostrophe
fiddle. Very cute.
I didn't want you to think there was a cat inside of a fiddle, because that would have been hard to do. It's located at 540 16th Avenue Southwest, obviously in Calgary. So while they are known for their nightlife, they are more well-known for their afterlife.
Ooh.
I came up with that line the other day. I was so excited. I called Tracy and I said, listen to this line I came up with.
Doesn't take much, folks.
No. You could say they put the boo in booze.
Very clever. Are you done?
I'm done.
All right, cool.
It's been a bar since 1992, and after spending over 40 years as a funeral home and crematorium, most of the funeral home decor has been replaced with sports memorabilia and neon beer signs, as you can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
But you'll find the next bar we talk about, it's the exact opposite.
Okay.
They left most of the decor.
That's awesome. In the
funeral home. Yeah. So if you walked into the Cat and the Fiddle pub right now, you probably would never know that it used to be a funeral home. But on the outside, they do have some of those chapel-type windows. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Like, are they stained glass?
No, but it kind of looks like a stained glass window. Oh, but that's left over from the days where that part was a chapel from the funeral home. So you would see that, and it might kind of give it away, but only if you probably knew. When you get to the bar, to get to the offices and the liquor room, you have to go down this very steep set of narrow stairway that has a low ceiling.
Yeah, you would love that. Yeah, no, I couldn't handle it.
So that's creepy in its own right. That area that you would walk into, that's the office and the liquor room, used to be the embalming room.
Oh my gosh.
They actually have pipes and drains that were once used to wash the bodies that are still visible. There's also an elevator shaft which was used to transport the ashes from there to the main floor from the crematorium.
Okay.
Many have searched the bar for evidence of ghosts, from mediums to paranormal investigators, and even had a ghost-seeking dog at one point. I don't have any details for that for you.
There's such a thing?
I guess. I mean, I guess there's drug-sniffing dogs. I don't know what they would be sniffing for. Energy? I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, you see animals act all weird when there's dark.
Like, I mean, that's true.
I mean, Tiffany just had a. Did you see that with her cat? Yeah.
And unfortunately, her dog has not just been passed gone that away. Long, no, so it may very well be some kind of residual energy or the dog visiting and the cat messing with it.
Aww.
The basement area, like I was talking about, is straight out of a horror movie. You just got to see what it looks like. I saw some pictures. It's pretty bad. By most accounts, the ghosts are supposed to be friendly and protective of the staff. Now, I'm not sure if she still owns the bar or not, but there was an interview with Jean, who actually owned it back in the early 2000s, and that's when this interview took place. She said back then that she was convinced that the bar was haunted because there was just way too many strange things that went on. For example, not once, but twice, late at night after the bar was closed, she was tidying up a little bit. She saw a gray mist form just off of the floor. She said that she wasn't scared, and she immediately sensed that it was a female spirit. She felt that it was friendly, and it meant her no harm.
Did she talk to it?
I don't know. But
hey, she obviously over felt there, you gray mist. If you ain't doing nothing, come help me clean up the bar.
She probably thought she was sweeping so hard she was kicking up dust.
Don't
anybody clean around here but me? But on another occasion, late at night, Jean was in her office working in front of her computer in that creepy-ass basement.
Yeah.
She felt something behind her. This time, she was frightened. She turned and looked but didn't see anything. As she looked back at the computer screen, she could see a shadow. Jean said that she was momentarily paralyzed. She sat in front of her monitor, and she became colder and colder. Then, just before the presence left, it touched her.
Where?
I think on the back.
Ooh.
She said that the icy touch chilled her to the bone for the next 2 days. Do you imagine just walking around freezing like... literally chilled to the bone for like 2 days. I've been outside sometime for a long time where it's like really cold, and it seems like it takes you a couple of hours to get warmed up. I could imagine if it was like a couple of days feeling like that.
Yeah.
Jean wasn't the only one, though, to have some strange experiences. One instance involved a cook. I say cook, but I've read somewhere else he was the kitchen manager. Mm-hmm. So I'll give him his due respect.
Well, of course.
Kitchen manager. He was described by coworkers as a real tough guy. Well, sometimes even the toughest people can get the crap scared out of them. And that's what happened here. He was skeptical, to say the least. One day, he thought he saw the owner, Jean, wearing a very pretty red dress. Now, granted, All he could see was a pair of red shoes and the red hem of the dress. He said, "Hi, Jean," but she didn't answer. She probably thought he was being rude and probably
giving her a... I'm like, "You need to take a bath?"
Yeah. "Hi, Jean. Hello."
"I'm bored. Let's go brush our teeth."
"What did you say?" All I heard was a cackle and some words.
"I'm sorry. I said I'm bored. Let's go brush our teeth." Well,
he went up the stairs and he ran into Jean. She was not wearing a red dress or red shoes.
Ooh-wee.
He asked if she had just been downstairs, like she magically came upstairs and changed her clothes. Like
magicians do it all the time.
Quick dress people do.
Yeah, I don't know how they do that. That's still amazing to me.
Anyway, she informed him that she had been upstairs this whole time. She hadn't been downstairs at all yet. So the kitchen manager later said that the shoes and dress seemed to materialize out of nowhere and they disappeared as quick, but there was absolutely no way he was going to believe that that's what he saw. He was convinced he saw a real person and it had to be Jean. And when he found out that it wasn't Jean, then he was freaked out. He said that after hearing that Jean hadn't been in the basement, he became visibly shaken. So he kind of knew it was probably a ghost to begin with, because most of the time people don't just materialize and dematerialize in front of you.
Well, maybe he thought it wasn't a ghost because all they do is wear white. Because they haven't got the color memo yet.
Well, maybe Canada is just a little more colored than we are. Because I think the Calgary Flames, I mean, their colors are red and white. So maybe she was a Flames fan.
There you go. That could explain it.
You're going to love this next name. Gabby Finkbeiner. She worked at the Cat and Fiddle for almost 8 years. And she said she's been told by psychics that this mysterious lady in red was once the funeral director, and that's why she hangs around the embalming room.
Why does she wear red?
I don't know. Maybe she wore red on a regular basis on her job. Maybe that was her favorite dress.
Oh.
I don't know. Supposedly, this spirit always smells like lavender. So if you smell lavender, you know she's around or getting ready to show up. I don't know if she always shows up in a red dress or if she's even visible most of the time. Maybe she just smell her and you just know.
Yeah. Well, it's nice either way.
In a later interview, which was actually about 6 years ago, Todd Carpenter was the general manager of this location. I don't know if he's still general manager or not. But at the time, he says that one of his favorite stories is about a frightened robber. So this guy breaks into the bar one day. He's ransacking the place. He looks into the mirror and he could see something behind him. It scared the hell out of him and he took off and out of the building. All of this was caught on video surveillance.
Good. Now that's the way it should be.
On the footage, there were two orbs that appeared to be chasing after the burglar.
You know, that's the way it should be in real life. If somebody's getting ready to commit a crime like that or do harm to another person, there should be a daggone ghost show up.
It's almost like they were saying, "Hey, this is our place."
That's right. Well, good for them.
Could maybe it was Norm or like Cheers.
Yep.
Anyways, Finkbeiner says, I'm going to say it as much as I can. I would usually use her first name, but I like saying Finkbeiner. Finkbeiner says that she believes that it was John the Biker. But who is John the Biker? Well, I'm glad you asked.
Well, I didn't, but go ahead.
Well, but I didn't have time to wait on you. Like most old buildings, there's going to be some creaks and some other sounds that you just naturally hear. But one of the strangest noises that have ever been heard at this particular bar didn't come from the building. It actually came from outside on the street. It was a bitterly cold winter night. It was about minus 22 degrees Fahrenheit.
What?
Not Celsius, Fahrenheit.
Good grief. You better put your long johns on.
The streets were icy, and that's very important for what's going to happen next. Several of the employees and customers could hear the sound of a motorcycle zipping up and down the street right in front of the bar.
And they're in there like, what the hell is that guy's problem?
Right. That should have been impossible with the weather and the conditions of the street, as we said. So many of the employees rushed to the door only to find that the streets were practically deserted and definitely no bikes, even though they could still hear the bike passing by as it zipped backwards and forwards, even though they couldn't see a bike. They could hear it.
Well, it's still beautiful in heaven, so he probably just didn't realize, you know?
Well, over the years, the biker has been given the name of John, so now he goes by John the Biker. It's thought that John may have been a biker who was killed in a motorcycle accident, and his body was brought there when it was a funeral home.
Oh.
And maybe that's...
That makes sense.
You know? I mean, it don't make sense to me. He didn't drive there on his bike. Probably came by a corner.
Well, that's true, but...
Or maybe he crashed right there in front of the bar.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know, I don't know. Anyway, but that's one of their thoughts. Employees think that John might be responsible for some other strange things that happened at the bar. For example, there's a few phantom smells that are pop up from time to time in the old embalming area. Jean says she worked in that area quite often because that's where the office was. She said she used to have the things happen so much that she became basically...
Immune to it.
It was, you know, no sensation at all.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how long something like that would last through the years.
She said that the smells were random and they would last from a few seconds to several minutes. That would pop up. Some of the other things that John the Biker may be responsible for involve electronics. You know, that happens a lot.
Yes.
With these hauntings. The TV, for example, has been replaced several times, but each one has the same problem. The volume will go from mute to max volume all on its own in just a matter of seconds. The channels like to change on their own as well. We got a funny story about that. When Finkbein first started at the bar, she would push the buttons on the remote several times, but the TVs wouldn't come on. She asked the manager if they could replace the remote or possibly the batteries, and she was told that it wasn't the TV, it was the ghost, and he will turn them on when he wants to. She thought it was a joke, but then all the TVs suddenly came on almost on cue. I told you that they changed channels and there was a funny story. On one occasion, it was Super Bowl Sunday. Everyone was watching the game. It was third down. It was near the end of the game. The team was driving. I didn't find out which Super Bowl was, but the team was driving for the win. So we're at the end of the game. It's third down. It's a big play. And suddenly every TV in the bar switched to SpongeBob.
Oh, now that is cruel. Oh my gosh. I can just see everybody in that bar right now. I can just see it.
I've always thought about like, watching a game or something, your team, and it's the last second shot, and then all of a sudden the electricity goes out.
Yeah.
Or the shot's in the air, so you don't know what happened.
Oh, man.
That'd be like the worst thing.
That'd be a funny joke, though.
Yeah. The jukebox is another item that has issues. Sometimes it will emit a crackling sound that should not be there, and they've had this inspected on several different occasions by the people who work for the jukebox company who know the item backwards and forwards. They come out, but they can never find a problem. I don't know if they've replaced the jukebox or not. But
yeah, I was going to ask that.
I bet she was.
I'll slap you upside your head, Baldy.
One of the strangest incidents at the bar happened one morning.
You are so rude. Don't act like you know me.
One of the strangest incidents at the bar happened one morning. From the basement to the roof, the entire building echoed with the sound of footsteps. Literally echoed.
You can do it.
No, I'm thinking like sometimes you'll have like metal steps, and when you step on them hard, they'll kind of ring out a little bit. So.
Yeah, because everybody has metal steps.
People have seen metal steps like on fire escapes and stuff. So there.
There's a hole in them.
Either way.
They can't make no noise.
Anyways. In this situation, there was loud echoing footsteps all over the whole place. It happened for several minutes. They did a complete search. Nobody was found in the building and no cause was ever determined. It just stopped on its own. It never happened again.
Well, good, because that would be annoying.
There's other spirits in there besides John the Biker and the former funeral director. There's a man in a top hat and a tuxedo that is said to haunt the men's bathroom.
What's he about?
Well, this is kind of odd in its own right, because that bathroom is not part of the original building. It's an addition. So it shouldn't even have any history.
They built on an addition to it, is what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah, they built that bathroom on. That bathroom wasn't there before. So it's not part of the funeral home. It's part since the bar's been built on. So nobody's really sure. On one occasion, though, there was a man that was using the bathroom. This guy was standing right beside him. And the man comes out of the bathroom, and he's shocked, and he said that that man that was beside him just walked straight through a wall. First of all, if the man is in a tux and a top hat, and I'm in a regular bar using the bathroom, that's going to be the first thing. Why the hell is this guy dressed in a tux and a top hat?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the case. There haven't been many reports of customers being freaked out.
He's a well-dressed pisser.
Apparently. There was one customer, though, who ordered a drink, and then for whatever reason that they're unaware of, got so frightened at something that he got up and he left without even taking a sip of his drink and never showed back up again. He was just sitting down, ordered a drink, and got freaked out and ran out and never even took a drink of his drink. I didn't get a report if he paid for it or not before you asked me.
Well, if he didn't take a drink, he shouldn't have paid for it.
Well, that's true.
Well, yeah, he should have. Well,
but I mean, sometimes you got to pay for it first.
True.
He might not have had a tab.
I wonder what the heck he saw.
This is the last story on the Cat and Fiddle. When Finkbeiner first started working at the bar, she didn't believe it ghosts in any way, shape, or form. She figured it was just an old building with a creepy history. And that's it. Nothing there. That's just her thoughts. The previous owner suggested that Finkbeiner say hello to the ghost in the morning when she was there. And she said that for a while, she actually would come in and say hello as she entered the basement, and she felt like a complete idiot.
What did she say? Hello, ghost?
Well, just hello, I guess. I don't know. She said she was completely aware of how ridiculous this sounded. After all, no one ever answered her. So one day, she's standing by a rack of wine glasses. She's talking to Jean. And Jean asked her if she believed in ghosts, and she looked at Jean and said, "No, Jean, I don't believe." At that time, a glass flew 2 feet off of the rack. Jean smiled and said, "Are you sure?"
Aha. I love a ghost with impeccable timing.
Absolutely.
So does she believe now?
Yeah, she did. Because a lot of those stories came from her. So. All right. Let's go to our next haunting. This bar, obviously, was a former funeral home, because I said that in the beginning. The Rose and Crown. It was actually built in the 1920s, and it was built as a funeral home. The actual owners, the original owners, Dora and David Davidson, actually had their funerals there.
Okay.
Beforehand. This one's located at 1503 4th Street Southwest, obviously in Calgary. I told you that when this place became a bar back in 1986, and they kept almost all of the funeral decor. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you go up to the third floor, it still has the original wallpaper from the
1920s. Oh, that's so awesome. Yeah.
All right, so I told you that I got confused and had to rewrite some of the story, and I'm going to tell you what happened on this. I found a book that talked about these two bars. Now, the book was Canadian Ghost Stories, and it's actually written by Barbara Smith. She does a good job, except I'm going to criticize Barb a little bit here. This book was written back in 2001, I think, so we're going back 20 years. She said, and I'll say this verbatim, there are two bars that were former funeral homes in Calgary. One of them is haunted. And she went on to tell the stories, but she didn't name the bars. Either one. She didn't name either bar. So she went on to tell these stories. Well, she said the other bar, when she reached out to the owner, they said that their bar isn't haunted. And they didn't have any stories, but if she wanted them to, they could make some up. So they're being sarcastic. Okay. Well, obviously, I'm like, well, I'm going to do this Canadian story. And that's the way I started off, was just going to do the one bar. And then I find out that the other bar is haunted. So I started seeing, when I first started doing more research, I find out, oh, this bar has got all these hauntings. And I, because I thought there was only one, the only bar that I saw initially was the Rose and Crown that we're going to talk about. So I start writing all this stuff. I start in the, all the stuff I just told you about Cat and Fiddle, I thought was the other bar.
Ah.
So I wrote it saying, hey, this is the Rose and Crown bar. Well, then I found out later as I start researching Cat and Fiddle, because I was like, hey, there are two haunted bars that were funeral homes, even though the book said there was only one. So something's changed in the last 20 years to where now they have no problem. So I call the Rose and Crown, thinking that's the haunted one. I said, hey, how close is the Cat and Fiddle from you guys? And they're like, I'm not really sure. So the guy asks one of the patrons in the bar, and he's like, oh, it's not too far. And I was like, is it walking distance? And I have a reason for asking this question. And first of all, he wanted to know if we were going to come up here and check it out. I'm like, no, I'm a little far away. You're on the other side of the country and a different country, but maybe sometime. Anyways, I said, we're just going to talk about the ghost stories between the two bars. And he said, oh, call back on Monday. And he said, hey, we got plenty of stories. Call back on Monday and talk to so-and-so. And he gave me a name, which I can't do on Monday because it's Memorial Day here with right. stuff going on. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I just thought it was funny. He was like, I don't like to come on radio shows. He said, but trust me, there's all kinds of stories. So and so will be more than happy to tell you about them. I'm like, okay, well, maybe I will call back and get that. But here's why I called and asked that question. And I know I'm way off base here, but you're going to see where it's coming from. I start searching Cat and Fiddle because I think I'm done with the Rose and Crown, because everything I just told you I thought was that. So I start searching Cat and Fiddle. Well, guess what? They got a guy on a motorcycle that they hear up front. Well, that's odd. So I thought, well, how can both of these bars have that guy on a motorcycle? Maybe they're really close to each other and maybe that'll make sense. And then I'm like, hey, they've got a lady in red too. And I'm like, there's no way that these stories, both of them intertwine like that. So that's why I wanted to call and see how close they were. And that's why I called the bar up there. But come to find out, because that lady didn't, in her book, Barbara, didn't mention any bars by names, I was completely wrong when I did the research on which bar was what. So I had to go back and change a bunch of stuff and rewrite a bunch of stuff. And it turns out everything I was talking about was actually the Cat and Fiddle, not the other bar. So now I will tell you about the other bar. But that's where all this came from, because she didn't bother to name the bars in her book.
It took a long time to get there.
I know. Well, I had to rewrite the whole thing.
But I am impressed that you called the bar.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Anyways. So let's go through this about the Rose and Crown. Are you ready?
Honey, I've been ready.
Like I said, the author in the book said that this place wasn't haunted, but as of now, they say it is. So something's changed in the last 20 years, and I don't know what it is. But my research on the bar showed that at least today, there are several ghosts. And according to, like I said, the gentleman I talked to Friday, they got a bunch of stories. From my understanding, they have three ghosts in this bar. And I don't know if it really wasn't haunted back then, or if the guy just didn't want to talk about it to a publicist and just publicize it. So anyway, we got three ghosts to talk about. This place, by the way, seems extremely fun. It's made like a British pub, and that'll actually come into play in a little bit. I mean, it's got a huge outdoor patio. It's got multiple different levels. It overlooks 4th Street Southwest in downtown Calgary. It's got live acoustic music through the week. Anyways, so if you're in this area, it's open. Go check it out. Anyways, I don't have near the stories for this one that I had on the other one, but they're still cool stories. So there's supposed to be three ghosts, as I said. The first is a little boy. His story goes back to the funeral home days. There was a family that were caretakers that lived up on the third floor. Supposedly the little boy's ghost is thought to be a young boy from their family who died from some type of illness in the building, but really not much facts on it. What I do know is the spirit of this child has been seen throughout the pub several different times, including his favorite place, which is lurking behind the furnace in the bar's basement. This is the area, much like the other location, that they believe the cremations would have taken place. And obviously the building was a funeral home.
Why would anybody want to hang out there?
I don't know. But the little boy is the most often to be seen of the three ghosts. The other two do make their presence known. There's the spirit of a middle-aged woman seen wearing a large white billowing dress. And a third ghost is a middle-aged man who appears to be very basic. And I know that because I saw two different publications that said he was nondescript. So, he obviously doesn't make much of an impression.
Yeah.
So, nothing really stands out about that guy. Of all the three of these spirits, none of them show up physically a whole lot, but they all three are believed to be responsible for the odd sounds of people walking around upstairs when the floor is completely vacant. Neighbors also report seeing lights flicker on and off in the upstairs during the middle of the night, long after the staff has all been gone from the building. There is one last thing to discuss here. Probably the most famous part is the picture. The bar actually has a picture displayed inside. This picture was taken by two women who were visiting Calgary from the UK. They stopped in at the Rose and Crown because it was, like I said, it had a British feel to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like the ones they had back home, so it felt comfortable, so they stopped in there. As a matter of fact, one of the bars they had at home that was similar actually had the same name, the Rose and Crown.
Oh, wow. Honestly, that's where they got it from, I reckon.
Probably. I've seen a couple. There's a Rose and Crown in Florida.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and a couple other ones. So as I was researching, I ran across some of the wrong ones. Luckily, I didn't throw a bunch of wrong information on that.
No, so. Good thing.
On their visit, they took several pictures. This was in the days prior to digital photography, so it was traditional film used for the picture. So once they got back in the UK, they had the pictures developed. They noticed something particularly odd about one of them. In the picture of the two ladies standing outside of the bar under the sign bearing the bar's name is a very distinct ghostly image of a little boy.
Aww.
The women made a copy and they sent it to the bar where the bar proudly has it displayed.
Oh, now that is very cool. Wow, I love that.
And this picture, and I'll try to remember to post it, but this picture, it definitely looks like a little boy. It looks like another picture overexposed on top.
Mm-hmm.
It's that clear. But, you know, like a faded out picture of a boy over top of the pic of theirs. But this was, you know, and that could have happened just because of the film. Maybe light exposure or something mm-hmm. like that. But it definitely wouldn't Photoshopped, and it definitely wouldn't.
Well, it couldn't have been Photoshopped anyway. Because,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. They didn't have that back
then. Yeah. Well, that's very cool. I'd love to see that. You'll have to show me.
We'll see.
No.
Oh, and I didn't talk about this beforehand, but we're going to take a quick sponsor break, but I've got Zach Bales on the show tonight.
Great.
We met Zach during CryptidCon, and he, during these whole conventions, they have these scheduled lectures
mm-hmm.
by the presenters all throughout the thing. His was by far, and the guys from Expedition Bigfoot were there, and a bunch of big names are there. His was the biggest hit of the entire thing.
Well, good for him.
But he lives in Somerset, and we all have heard about how mm-hmm. all the crazy stuff paranormal-wise yep. coming from Somerset. He's a teacher. He's got he's written several books on Bigfoot and on UFOs. Got a couple of atlases where he actually shows you all these different locations where it's pumped
up. Perfect.
But he has some breaking news.
Uh-oh.
About... Nobody gets that.
No.
He's got some breaking news about something that he's going to open up, and then that led to probably more breaking news, because I think we're going to end up doing a live event there, because we're going to have his place opening, the Paranormal Museum's there. Hellyer's talked about Somerset forever, so it will be a cool place, I think a destination place for people that are really
very nice, exciting.
So we're going to get into all that after our sponsor break, so quick break right this second. All right, Tracy, real quick, Indianapolis show is coming up. It's only 60 seats available. Some of those tickets have already sold. You want to get your tickets now? We'll have some of our new food products mm-hmm. over there. We'll bring some of those out. Might be the first time anybody's seen them in person.
Yeah.
Other than the people who bought them. But, I mean, it'll be the first chance for people to get them other than at a decent price instead of $700 shipping. There might be a slight exaggeration.
Yeah,
a little Anyways, bit. People who have tried it already have given us nothing but fantastic, not even just positive, fantastic reviews.
Yeah, thank you guys. It's so amazing.
And we appreciate that.
Oh, we do so much. We just, you know how it is when you jump in with something. You're not sure how it's going to go, but thankfully so far so good.
We also have our anniversary show coming up at mm-hmm. the Old College on Hospital Hill with Annie Weaves and Brendan Shea from Serial Spirits. Those tickets are limited, too. That one comes with a tour.
Yes.
So you get to actually go into the haunted location that was on the season 2 finale of Destination Fear. Dakota and his gang was out there. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, can't wait for that one. That's going to be really cool.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun.
So, Tracy, what do you got going on over there?
All right. Well, with our iTunes this week, we have Mojo Lobster, Tiffany 330, Robert Killjoy X, and I'm going to guess this is what this says because it was in short kind of way, but I think it was Darth Vader 75, okay. I hope. And if it's not, you please correct me. Our Patreons this week was George Christian, Megan Arnett, and Rachel Tucker. Thank you guys so, so much for your support. We can't thank you guys enough. We appreciate all the reviews we get and your support. And we are still humble to this day. We still can't believe it. So we just want to let y'all know we love y'all so, so much.
All right, let's listen to Zach Bell's Trust Me Guys. And I say this with all of them, but you guys are really going to like Zach. He is, like I said, he's a teacher. He knows what he's talking about and he knows all this stuff. And mm-hmm. he shares a bunch of cool stories from Somerset.
Yes.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step 1. Go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step 2. Collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa welcome bonus.
Step 3. Play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games. All for free?
Step 4. Unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Hey guys, I've got a guest on tonight I think you're really going to enjoy. I've got Zach Bales on from the Paranormal Road Trippers. And we got to know Zach a lot over a couple of day period when we were at CryptidCon back this past Thanksgiving weekend. Had a blast. I'll be honest with you, I didn't know Zach, and I'm a little ashamed of that because he's literally right up the road from us. And he is... I use the term expert. He might not use that term, but he's an expert in a couple of different fields. Got plenty of books out there on subjects. And Zach, when you gave your seminars out there, they were the most talked about of the entire show. And there were several people giving lectures and seminars and talks. Yours were the ones that were the most talked about. And I think the one you did was on UFOs. Did you do two or did you just do the one?
At CryptidCon, I did one over the history of Bigfoot, the Bigfoot phenomenon.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Bigfoot. Yeah. But
I've been known to talk about UFOs as well. I've actually got an event coming up in Cape Girardeau, Missouri this summer. It's a kind of a UFO bent to that festival, that event, that conference. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about the UFO lore.
Well, let's talk about what
paranormal road trippers are. If you sum it up for me, for somebody who's not aware, sum up what paranormal road trippers is.
I'm a teacher. I'm a teacher, and I spend a lot of time working with young people because of that. And over the years, I'm an English teacher, and I've always liked writing. You know, that's why I got into English. And over the years, the students in my classes at school got wind that I liked, you know, strange things. I call it the unusual, the unexplained, and the otherworldly. They got the memo over the years that their teacher was a big fan of this stuff. And kids have a tendency to want to get their teachers off track. I mean, that's what they do, you know, and teachers are aware of this, you know. I know I tried to get my teachers off track when I was in school, but they excel at it. But you know, I guess what they didn't realize, but they were kind of getting me to talk about things that I kind of enjoyed talking about anyway. So really the joke was on them. And over the years, I started writing down, you know, I've always been interested in folklore, especially Kentucky folklore, but really, you know, all over. I love a good story. And I think it's our job to keep folklore alive. I feel like folklore is one of the things, it's like a common identity, you know, that people in a certain region have, is they all have the same folklore, the same background. And so I, in an effort to kind of keep that going, I started writing a lot of the stories that I hear, some of the experiences I've had in Kentucky and beyond. And before long, when the students at school would ask me, they'd say, "Hey, Mr. Bales, talk, you know, tell us a ghost story or tell us something." On a Friday afternoon, they'd try to get me off track. And I would say, "Well, now, wait a minute. I've actually written these stories down." So it was kind of the paranormal road tripper started as a way of trying to promote literacy at the high school level, which I feel like is, you know, that's what we fight for all the time, is literacy. And the kids didn't realize that I was kind of, dare I say, tricking them, you know, into reading, which is not a bad thing. I don't feel like, you know, from an English teacher's perspective, but, you know, it's an insatiable thirst for stories is kind of what kept me going, kept me trying to look for more folklore, more stories, and traveling. And that's a, you know, a good thing about teaching. I just said goodbye to another school year, and in the summertime, and that's when me and my wife try to take off and, you know, explore some of these places that are supposed to be haunted. I think John Keel, he's a famous, I'm sure you're well familiar with John Keel's mm-hmm. work. He referred to them as window areas, you know, areas that are kind of have a lot of activity, unusual. Like I said, the unusual, the unexplained or otherworldly activity. And that's what we take off and do during the summer months, and kind of bleeding over into more of the year, though, I guess the more and more interested we get in this. But then we kind of developed, my wife and I developed the idea of calling ourselves the paranormal road tripper. And sort of filming short videos along the way, continuing to write. And you know, over time, more and more we've been attending more and more conferences, and it's becoming, I don't want to call it an obsession, you know, the paranormal or the search for these things, but it's certainly becoming more and more important to us. I mean, it's becoming something that it's a life. It's a passion. It's a passion. That's all there is to say. So that's kind of what paranormal road tripper is, really. It's a, seeking out these strange things, these strange places.
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. My wife and I actually took some ideas from you guys, not necessarily directly, but, you know, at your booth at CryptidCon, you had so many different types of items you could sell, from T-shirts to little books and to little knickknack type things. And, you know, we were sitting there this whole time thinking, you know, for somebody like us, you know, most of the people who come into a convention, they don't know who we are. You know, they come to our live shows. That's different. Everybody's there for us. We can sell a lot of merch. But at these events, most people don't know us, so they're not going to buy a T-shirt. So we started thinking, hey, we need to be more like Zach over here and have a multitude of things that people would be interested in rather than just our shirts if they don't know the show. And so we started to actually just opened up our new food line product. This 16 different items this past week. And that was really to give something else to be able to sell at the live events. And that was mainly because we saw the success you had.
That's why I've been keeping up with you all on Facebook. I saw that you have some new items coming out. I'm kind of excited to try some of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, definitely we'll hook you up if you're going to be a CryptidCon this year.
But one of the reasons I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
One of the reasons that we try to bring a lot of the items that we do, is we feel like that a lot of times people don't get the opportunity to travel to some of these places. Like New Orleans, for example, there's all sorts of knickknack shops and you can find voodoo and heck, there are vampire bars or speakeasies and all sorts of, we run into all sorts of crazy and strange things down there. And same thing if you go to Sedona, Arizona, the vortex capital of like the world. So one of our goals in our travels is to try to bring back little bits and pieces of these places and try to sell them, wherever we go. Like for example, every time we make it out to New Mexico, we make it one of our goals is to stop by the crash site or the debris field. I shouldn't call it the crash site, the Roswell debris field. Try and get a little bit of sand to bring that home. A lot of people, they might not make it there themselves. So that's kind of it's kind of a neat little souvenir. I feel like some of that stuff is.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you
decided to see your old stuff, your product.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because everybody knows by now that listen to the show that our studio's got all this paranormal, paraphernalia, we'll say, all over the place. And two of the items we got, one of which I showed you is proudly displayed right on our podcasting table, is the cast we got from Bluff Creek that you guys had at your booth that we took care of. And then I've got a little bottle of the Roswell sand that we've got displayed over here. So yeah, it's pretty cool that some of the stuff you had. And to be honest with you, I probably should have bought a bunch more. I'm starting to run out of room. That's why the little bottle of sand worked out so perfect. It didn't take up much room.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Keel earlier, the author, and that actually was leading me right into my next question. So that worked out good. Obviously you're in Somerset, Kentucky. And Hellyer has put Somerset on the map for a lot of people for paranormal reasons, whether it be the courts or whether it be ley lines or whatever the situation is. There's obviously some unique stuff going on down there. Of course, we got the awesome paranormal museum down there. If nobody's been, you need to go check it out. But you'd mentioned Keel. He's mentioned a few times throughout the Hellyer series. So tell me a little bit about Somerset. You're there, you're in the thick of it. Do you really see anything or feel anything abnormal about the place, or is it just home to you? What are your thoughts?
Well, I was born and raised in Somerset. I guess maybe that gives me at least an interesting maybe perspective, I guess, on this question I'm trying to think about. I mean, it is an unusual place. I'll be the first to tell you. I mean, there are multiple Civil War battles that were fought in this land here. And of course, the limestone caverns running beneath the grounds here. All sorts of haunted history. And I feel like, I've been really fighting to put Somerset on the map for a long time with this stuff. Far before Hellyer. I actually wrote my first book called The Amateur's Guide to Ghost Hunting. It actually, I released that in 2009, and it featured a lot of the spots in and around this community and around this area, really, that I'd had personal experiences at, unusual experiences, primarily just ghost related things. Like I said, folklore is a big deal for me. And, growing up in this town, my parents would, regale me and my brother with ghost stories, telling about these places. You don't have to go too far. All of our high school kids, middle school kids in our community, everybody hears these stories growing up. So it was always my goal to try to, I don't think it really dawned on me at the time that maybe Somerset was more prone to this type of activity when I was, much younger. But it was something I definitely, whenever I, first kind of got my driver's license, I'll put it like that. One of the first things I wanted to do is go to some of these places that you hear growing up that have some unusual activity. And I wanted to put the legends to the test. And that's kind of it's kind of what I did for several years up until I published a book about the Somerset area called The Amateur's Guide to Ghost Hunting, which, as I said, it kind of covers a lot of the phenomenon that I experienced. But yeah, I think Hellyer's done a lot for bringing awareness to some of the unusual stuff that's going on in and around Somerset. But I'll be the first to tell you, there's a whole lot more to this area than just what is, I guess, appears in that particular show.
Right.
There are legends and lore that in this community, there's plenty more to where that came from. Actually, I'm kind of working on a project right now to kind of bring to light a few of those, which I'll talk about, I guess, a little later. But I'm kind of working towards bringing some more of the stories that are important to people around here, bringing some of those more to light as well. But yeah, that's kind of how I'd answer your question. You know, you don't really realize, I guess, that you're growing up in such a special place until, well, it's funny. I was writing a Bigfoot book, the Bigfooters Atlas. I released it in 2020. And as I was writing this atlas, you know, I kept leaving town. I kept calling people from all over the country, trying to get stories. And eventually trying to locate some of the famous locations in the history of the Bigfoot phenomenon, I ended up on the phone with a man from Los Angeles, California. And he was telling me about his experience with the wild man phenomenon. He was going on and on. And I got a really good story from him, a really great story. And near the end of our conversation, he said, well, you know, it's nice talking to you. He said, where did you say you were from again? I said, well, I'm from Somerset, Kentucky. He said, oh my gosh, are you serious? And I said, no. I said, why? You know, I didn't realize that we were so well known. He said, I'm really jealous. I said, really? You don't hear that from somebody from Los Angeles, California. Right. I tell you that they're jealous of being from rural Kentucky. I said, you're jealous? He said, yeah. And he went on. He didn't talk much about Somerset per se, but he was the one who kind of sparked my interest in writing a sequel about UFOs. He said, did you know that you're like 20 or 30 minutes from one of the ultimate, most famous UFO incidents that ever occurred? And I was, you know, racking my brain trying to think, now what's he talking about? And then he said, Stanford, Kentucky, yeah. 1976. He said, you know, that, he said, man, what I wouldn't do to spend a day where you're from. And I was thinking, well, you know, I need to start telling that to my kids at school. You know, they're always saying, well, I want to get out of here as quickly as I can. I should tell them, no, there's people from some of the largest cities in the world that are saying they want to come spend time here with us. You know, it's just fascinating. It's fascinating how much, how these stories are starting to get out there. And I got to give credit to Hellyer. And I know there's a lot of people fighting the good fight for this particular region and some of this folklore that's around us.
Yeah. That UFO case is one of the most credible and most full of evidence out there. I mean, and to think that it happened right here, well, I think in the late 70s, I mean, but those three women, just their stories just all lined up, and they had the marks on their body to prove everything. And, you know, it's just,
they went under hypnosis, I believe. And their stories stayed. It's a fascinating tale. I mean, that whole thing. I actually, after I wrote my Bigfoot book, I ended up writing a sequel called The UFO Chasers Atlas. And to create that, the book itself is a series of maps. If you're interested in the UFO phenomenon, a series of maps that will take you to the places where it happened. So for that book, I drove the trail. I refound the route that the three ladies were taking that night from the Redwood restaurant outside of Lancaster and on down to Liberty. I retraced the trail. I got some photography on the way. I'm not gonna lie, I didn't see any UFOs on the way. But for me, part of the importance of these things, like I said, it's our job to keep this folklore alive, to keep these legends alive. And so much of it, I feel like over the years, I mean, that story is almost 50 years old. And yep. I at some point there won't be witnesses around anymore who can verify, you know, this is where they were that night. This is the road they went on. This is where it happened. You know, this is where they first saw the lights in the sky. This is where, when they came to and they were in the car was off the road in the field. This is where they came to. So that was kind of my goal, was to try to find this stuff before these people, you know, the people who were involved intimately in the situation, you know, they're no longer around. That's kind of it's a sad part of it, you know, that's eventually going to happen. But it's kind of what my goal is, I guess, with some of the books I've been writing recently.
What do you think about the, while we're on Kentucky and UFOs, what do you think about the Paintsville UFO story? Do you think that's a real story or do you think that's just a complete fiction?
To be honest with you, I'm not familiar with the Paintsville UFO story.
Okay.
Is this a big one? In my book, I included the Hopkinsville story and the Hanford story. Those are the two Kentucky stories I really poured into for that. I mentioned the Fort Knox situation in the sky, but I'm not familiar with a Paintsville story.
I won't go into big detail on it, but I'll give you the synopsis and I'll tell you what the main complaint is with it. It supposedly came from a conductor of a train, and they were coming through the area. They say basically as they got to a bridge, this ball came down, it hit the front of the plane or the train, and it caused a little bit of damage. They radioed it in and they were told to basically go to this train depot that was closed down. And they took the main car, put it under a big tent. They brought people in to talk to them. They ended up spending all night there being interrogated basically by people that weren't for the company they worked for, that was, you know, men in black or that type of situation, government agencies. And then they had to come back by the next day. They put them on another train to bring them back home. And they said when they went by that station, the train and everything was gone. And there's a lot of people that say that some of the information he gave as a conductor, even though a name was never put on it, it sounds like he knew about trains, but maybe not enough. There's people saying, oh, if you read the whole report, you know, there's no way they could have stopped, or he had the calculations wrong on the speed of the train and stopping and all that. So there's a lot of people that say it was just completely made up, but the whole thing is supposed to be like an incident report from a conductor. So there's people who believe that's a real story, and there's people who believe that it's completely made up. But yeah, it's one you'll get a lot of fun out of. It's nothing else. It's a fun read.
See, it's funny you mention that. As I dove into a lot of the UFO stories, you know, some of them, and Bigfoot stories for that matter, some of them, I hate to say it, they didn't hold up. Some of the stories didn't hold up to just the facts. For example, and I hate to call people liars, but the Honey Island Swamp Monster, famous story out of the preserve, the swampland up just north of Slidell, Louisiana, just north of New Orleans. And, you know, the legend itself, if you start looking into the historical records, I mean, according to records, it was a train that crashed and an animal got off. Look into what they said. It was a circus train that crashed. And if you start diving into the history of that incident, it simply put, it just didn't take place. There was a similar incident that took place, a circus that crashed, but it was nowhere near, around the same era, but it was nowhere near Honey Island Swamp. So I feel like sometimes some of these stories, I don't want to say, you know, people make up their own, you know, and put their own spin on things, but you know, I guess that's maybe human nature. For example, out in New Mexico, just about everybody who owns a plot of land out there, they say that's where the crash, you know, took place in 47. It's incredible. If you counted the number of crash sites out there, there's just one for everybody who owns a piece of land. That was one of the challenges that me and my wife had last summer. We spent a lot of time out there trying to track down, you know, the actual site where something came down. You know, I'm not necessarily saying today that it was a UFO. You know, it may have been a weather balloon, but or any number of things. I won't necessarily say just a weather balloon, but any number of things may have came down. But just trying to find the exact location where that actually happened was a real pickle. I mean, it took us, it took us a while and talking to people and pouring through some of the stories. You know, a lot of those old guys signed affidavits back in the day, and they didn't really mark down specifically where these locations were. One fellow in particular, his name was Jim Ragsdale. And the clues he ever said that he, according to him, he was in the back of a truck in a truck bed with a little lady at the time. And they were, they had a little tryst. I'll put it like that. the night that the UFO came down. Well, over the years, his story changed and changed and changed. But he always kind of hovered around the idea that they were parked next to a rock, enormous boulder that was broken in half. And pretty much that's all the clues he gave. It was near Boy Scout Mountain, I believe was the name of the mountain. So that was all we had to go on. So me and my wife wandered. I mean, we went as far as the car could go. And then got out of the car and just started wandering, trying to find the trail that he was on, trying to find, you know, inside of Boy Scout Mountain and find the rock, you know, the fabled rock that that Jim Ragsdale was supposedly parked next to the night that he and his lady friend were having a tryst when the UFO came out. And sure enough, we found it. I mean, it was like one of the biggest eureka moments I feel like I've ever had. It was like, you know, a needle in a haystack. Certainly a needle in a haystack type scenario. But then we turn around and look and, oh my gosh, there's the rock, you know, and there it was. And you know, that's all we had to go with for a lot of that stuff. But it's fun. You know, that's part of the fun, I guess, is sorting through some of the, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of stories like what you're talking about, the Paintsville incident, you know, the story, some of them don't add up, but they're still
You got the famous one out of Texas, I believe it is, where supposedly the alien is buried and it crashed into the guy's windmill and all that stuff. And that story pretty much has been debunked 1,000 times that, you know, but it was all done for tourism and all that. So, I mean, you know, you never know what somebody's going to say or do when it comes to something like that.
And I tell you, it's fascinating. They still, that little town, they still have their, you know, their windmill barbecue restaurant there. It just gets, I mean, they still like to, they like to parade about the UFO story. So, you know, it's still making money for the town. I think that was, the fellow who wrote the article for the Dallas newspaper at the time, you know, they still to this day still use that story to promote themselves. So, you know, you can't fault them at all. It's just part of the joy of it. I don't know.
So let me ask you, let's go back to your first book. Tell me out of all the stories that you researched and put in the book about Somerset and that area, what's your favorite? What's one that stands out, or what's one that when you were researching, you ended up with a really cool experience out of your own? What stories really stand out to you about writing that book?
There are several that really stand out to me. Like I said, Somerset and the really South Central Kentucky is in no short supply of creepy old stories and creepy old cemeteries and creepy old places in general. One of the premier hotspots for paranormal activity, supposedly in Somerset, is called Soul's Chapel. It's kind of a famous spot. There's actually a video on YouTube. If you Google Soul's Chapel, I had an interview years ago talking about it. And at the time, I don't know, it's kind of off topic, but at the time when I helped produce the video, I didn't have any qualms about doing it. But since I was involved with that video, and just in the past 10 years, I don't know what's happened, but some of these locations in Pulaski County, and it might be the publicity that's come to the region, but they're really going downhill. Soul's Chapel has went from being a beautiful cemetery to just a relic of itself. The building was burned down. A couple teenagers went out there a number of years ago and decided to torch the old church. Now people go around spray paint and just, I mean, it's an absolute shambles and just disrespectful, bonfires in the middle of the cemetery. And, but that's a big hotspot in Pulaski County, Soul's Chapel. There's another location named Short Creek, but really the one that stands out to me, right outside of Somerset, there's this community called Nancy, Kentucky. It's kind of a farm community. And growing up here in the county, I always heard stories about what they, you know, kids at school would refer to it as the suicide barn. is what they called it out in Nancy. And if you're from the Nancy area, you probably are familiar with this. It's kind of a famous place. And the legend went that in the 1970s that a gentleman went to the doctor, got a bad report from the doctor, and came home, said goodbye to his wife, said goodbye to his family, and hanged himself in the barn. And over the years, you know, for the last 50, the story has kind of went that the barn was haunted. You know, the man, all that negative energy that was brought upon the side by this suicide, had just kind of, you know, just left a really just a haunting. It made the place a subject of a haunting. So growing up, I heard the story. I never knew where the barn was. Always heard people out in the Nancy community, you know, they all knew where this was. We're just about 10 miles from Somerset. But long story short, when I got my driver's license, 16 years old, 18 years old, 20 years old, I started digging into this stuff. And at the time I was dating the woman who I'm now married to. And it's kind of a coincidence. One night, Saturday night, we were looking for something a little interesting to do. And I started talking about this suicide barn, because I knew she was from the Nancy community. And she said, "Oh, do you know about that?" And I said, "Of course I know about that. Everybody knows about that." I said, "Do you know where it is?" She said, "It's ours." I said, "What do you mean it's yours?" She said, "My family owns the barn." I said, "What do you mean?" She says, "My dad and mom, they own the suicide barn." So I said, "Oh my gosh, what are the odds that we can get inside this place?" And she said, "I'd say about 100%.
Probably pretty good.
So, you know, two or three nights later, we went to the famed suicide barn in the Pulaski County area. And we had ourselves a time, to be honest with you, from the time we got there. And I don't know, do I have time to tell the story, I guess?
Do you? Sure, absolutely. Yeah. You got...
All right. Well, from the time we got there, we took a lot of the prominent ghost hunting equipment with us. You know, we took digital audio recorder, tried to hear disembodied voices. We took an EMF detector. We took a contraption called the Paramid. It was pretty popular a number of years ago. I feel like over time, though, some of the older equipment's kind of fallen out. I don't know why that is, but it was a pyramid shaped device. And on either side of the top of the pyramid, it had like little sonar, like basically it emitted like this sonar. And if something breaks the sonic, kind of like a sound, a motion detector, but it used sound to detect the motion, basically. And, you know, if the sound got broke, it would start beeping and lighting up and going haywire, you know. And there's a little meter on the middle of the pyramid that would tell you how close, whatever, if it's an unseen hand, let's say, you know, how close that unseen hand is to that pyramid. It would let you know, is it 3 feet, 2 feet, 1 feet? Is it right next to this pyramid shaped device? Well, we took that. We took a number of things out to the barn that night. And you know, as we were, it was just me and her at the time. Or no, I'm sorry, it was me and her and a friend of ours. And we were outside, you know, ready to go in this place. And they always say when you're doing an investigation, you start with an opening statement. You know, that's kind of the routine. You let, if there's any ghosts at the site, you know, spirits or whatever else, you let them know that, you know, you brought equipment. You'd appreciate their cooperation if they would give you some sort of proof that they're there. You know, you just basically ask for their blessing for being on the site. And I've had many investigations where we don't go that much further than the opening statement because we don't get much, you know, maybe we record a voice that doesn't sound too friendly. And oftentimes we've ended the investigation right after the opening statement. Well, on that particular night, right about the time I was saying, we've got some equipment. If you give us any sign of your presence, right the second that I say the word presence or as I'm finishing that sentence, there's this big steel, like gasoline, like tank. You know, it's a farm here. It's a barn. And there's like the farmer, my father or my stepdad would, or my stepfather-in-law, I should say, would fill up his tractor and stuff. About the time that I finished saying that, there's this ping noise. Just, I mean, it sounds like something took a hand and smacked the side of that gas tank just as hard as it could. As you can imagine, I about jumped out of my skin. My wife at the time, my girlfriend, she about jumped out of her skin. It was like, okay, are we leaving yet? Okay, that's, you know, you've got your proof. And I said, well, no. That just means that we think there's going to be some activity tonight. I said, they say that the loft is where it happened. So we can't just stand outside the barn and investigate. We have to go up to the loft. So that's what we did. You know, we walked up the old creaking wooden steps. It's pitch black, you know, and just as creepy as all get out. And we get up to that loft. And at the time, there was like a wall of like hay bales on one side, small little hay bales kind of lined up. But really, the loft was just kind of just open, just all across it. I mean, you could see not really see well, it was dark, but it was just empty. And there was this kind of little hay scattered around the top. Well, we start to investigate up there. I end up putting our motion detector. We had another device called a geophone as well. And it records vibrations. You know, if you put a geophone on top of like a wooden board or a staircase that there's supposed to be activity on, if spirit were to step on the stairs, it would just register the vibrations from that, from the spirit walking down the stairs, knocking on a door. It's got a lot of uses. But I sat that in the middle of the loft of this barn, and we start our investigation, and finally, we're just not having a lot of luck. You know, that's half of investigating the paranormal is there's a lot of downtime. There's a lot of times you don't have a lot of luck. And late in the investigation, you know, it's about time to leave. We've been there in an hour. And after that initial sort of ping, you know, that smack along that, you know, we hadn't had a lot of activity. And finally I say, you know what, let's try something else. And we're standing in one corner of the loft, me and my wife and my friend, or my girlfriend at the time, my friend. And I say, you know, you've not given us much effort here tonight. You've not proven, you know, we come a long way. You know, we've come out here 10, 15 miles out. You know, we've driven out here. We're just wanting some proof here. And really, on the count of three, we're about to leave. I say, we're about to leave this place. And you know what? This is a legendary spot. You know, that's why I say, this is a legendary location. I've heard about this going up. Everybody in our town's heard about this. And we come out here and we don't get any activity. I said, on the count of three, if you don't give us something, I'm going to go home and I'm going to tell everybody that this place is not haunted. I'm going to go home and tell everybody that there's no reason anybody should ever come out here again. I said, one, two, and before I could say three, or right at when I said three, there was a thunk in the corner of the barn on the wooden beams of the floor. And then thong, thong. And I realized that it was footsteps. And as we sat there, they were getting louder and louder. It was coming from the far corner of the loft, and it was bang, bang, bang. And these things were getting closer. But not only as they were getting closer, that little geophone sitting in the middle of the floor that was recording the vibrations, you know, the lights were getting more and more intense on the thing because it was, the vibrations were getting louder and louder as this thing was approaching this device. So it was bang, 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 as it was coming across the floor. As it got to the middle of the loft where that geophone was laying, of course, the geophone starts getting wild because it's basically right on top of it. And then it starts to get a little lighter and a little lighter as it continues walking towards us. As you could imagine, as we're hearing these noises and these footsteps are getting closer and closer, I grab her, she grabs me, my other friends on the other side, we're hunkered back, we're terrified. You know, I'd like to say we were, you know, big and bad, but we weren't. You know, we were scared, and we were like, where's the stairs? We have, you know, we've flown too close to the sun on wings of wax here. And about the time that thing got, I'm telling you, it must have been 2 or 3 feet out, maybe a yard out from us. And the final footstep, and as I realized it was about to overtake us, I just shouted, okay, we believe you. We believe you. You know, thanks for your help. And silence. I mean, it was silent. You could hear a pin drop in that loft. And I said, well, thank you. I'm not going to tell anybody that there's no activity in this barn ever again because you know, you gave me proof. And I wrote about that in one of the on two of one of the ghost books that I wrote, but it's still this day, I'm telling you, it gives me just kind of chills. It's just a creepy location. And we've gone back a number of times. We've had some more activity out there, but I'll never forget the first night when that incident happened. We went back later on, and at the time I was wearing a backpack. We got into that. You know how there's this whole craze that everybody wanted to have their ghost hunting show on YouTube there for a while. Well, yeah. One night we decided, you know, we could probably do that too. So we got this camera, like backpack contraption that had the camera that kind of faces out. We brought it out there, and we were trying to be big and bad at the time. And we went out there, and as I was going up the stairs, this old rickety staircase, that loft, my wife grabbed a hold of that backpack and was pulling on me. And I knew she was terrified. She must have seen something. And she was pulling and yanking. And I was, no, stop. You're going to make me lose my balance. I turned around and she wasn't there. And I realized that there was no one on the stairs, and that whatever had a hold of that backpack and was trying to pull me down. I always referred to it as it's the inhabitant of the loft is what I like to say. But yeah, that's kind of, I don't know. That's just kind of one of the things that kind of got me in or keep me going with ghost hunting. But as I said, over the years, it's become a passion, but Somerset certainly has its share of these unusual stories. And I just love that they're finally getting out. I love to tell them myself. And I love that, that there's some attention on some of this stuff. It's interesting. It's what I consider it, but I'm sorry if I've rambled. I just love the topic.
That is exactly how you tell a story. And for those of you out there listening, that is why everybody came out of his lecture and lined up at his booth to talk to him further and to buy the book, the Bigfoot Atlas and the UFO Atlas and all the other stuff he had, because how could you not be fully engaged with that kind of storytelling? So no, that was awesome. I love that. Did you ever get any proof of the legend of the barn, if that was true? I mean, I did indeed.
I've done a lot of research. I won't mention the name of the, well, I mean, I you know, you talk to enough people out in this community, and actually the family, shortly after the suicide took place, they sold their property. And that's when my wife's parents ended up kind of claiming or buying, purchasing the land from them. But that's kind of, I always tell people that that's one of the most haunted places that I've ever been, just because of some of the weird activity. There's actually another, my grandfather on the other side of the family, he came into a cemetery, like an old cemetery. And he ended up, he purchased this kind of this secluded place. I think if I recall in the Hellier series, they went to a cave, Long Hollow Cave, I think is what it was referred to in the show. And if not, maybe I'm thinking about having talked to the team that put it together. But my grandfather, decades ago, bought this area in near Somerset, just 5 or 10 miles outside of town, called Long Hollow. And it is one of the most secluded areas in Pulaski County. You wouldn't even think you were near Somerset if you go here. Just this deep kind of valley. And in the heart of it's this little cemetery. And I won't mention I never mentioned the name of the cemetery. I wrote about this in my book as well. It's the last chapter, actually, of my ghost book, was about this little place. And I tell you what, it is an eerie little land. And there was some people that used to kind of squat on the land. But long story short, there's a cemetery on it, and it's a children's cemetery. Like in the cemetery, it's every grave, not everyone, but most of them are born and died the same day. From like, and all of them are 1800s. We're talking century. It's a century old cemetery. And almost every, it's a children's cemetery. All of them born and died like the same day. One family, as I said, I won't mention the name of them, but it's because I don't want to, same thing with the guy who, the barn situation, I'd feel bad probably mentioning them. Not to mention the well, the land that the cemetery I'm referring to, we actually leased it out. There's a farmer. He has cattle all over the place. And I would think somebody might go out there and, you know, open the fence and not close it. Yeah. We'd have cattle all over the place. But I'm telling you what, that might be one of the, I've been to a lot of creepy places. I've spent, you know, multiple nights at the Stanley Hotel or the Hotel Del Coronado or down in, I know we talked earlier about Key West, you know, I mean, there's a lot of creepy little locations I've been to, but honestly, I probably the two scariest or most paranormally active I've ever been were these two locations I'm talking about, minor little places, some of them off the beaten path, that little cemetery, just absolutely paranormally active, just a darkness to that place. And but the same thing that in the barn too. And like I said, I mean, I spent at the Liz, we went the night at Lizzie Bordenack's house, and we spent time at the Alamo, Alcatraz, the Winchester Mission. I mean, all over. But if you really want to know the best stories that I have ever experienced, best things I've ever experienced are always from little places like that. It's never the Waverly Hills or the Bobby Mackey's. It's always just the little places like that, maybe off the beaten path. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if paranormal investigators run off the activity. Maybe that's what happens. But
you know, I've heard somebody mention that to me. They were talking about the old hospital on College Hill. We actually got a live show and a tour coming up there in August, and you know that's newly been opened up in the last couple of years for investigations. And I know I was talking to Annie Weebs out of Huntington, West Virginia, and she said that she thinks in some cases that's why you get a lot of activity in the very first couple of hours at a place, and then it just kind of dies off, so to speak, because they've spent all their energy in the beginning because they're so anxious to talk to somebody and to make themselves known. And to places like Waverly and Bobby, there's always so many people going through there, it's probably ho-hum to them.
Yeah, I definitely could see that being the case. I know that I read about this years ago. I've never asked them. I've met the guys on the Ghost Hunters television show a number of times at festivals and events, but I've never asked them. But I always heard that they started their investigations. They have a device that they call like an EMF pump, I guess. And it just sort of just creates this so much electromagnetivity. And just like fills the air with every investigation they do. They just run this thing like an enormous, EMF pump that just sort of just blankets the space with so much, I guess, juice that the paranormal activity maybe can feed off of if you believe the connection, I guess, between EMF fields and the paranormal. But maybe if investigators started carrying those, like I know that I've seen handheld versions before, but again, a lot of the older ghost hunting gadgets I feel like are on the way out. I don't ever see really geophone. I know that they've consolidated a lot of it into those, the Mel meter, and the EDI plus meter. A lot of they've consolidated a lot of those things, but there's something to be said for some of those old school ghost hunting gadgets that you still sometimes see out there. I don't know.
The last investigation that I went on was up at Whispers Estates, and we had all kinds of action up there, more than I've ever had any place I've been. And they actually had one of those devices that they had just gotten that puts out the energy out there. So yeah, that's probably, there probably is something to that.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even know those were out there. That's cool. As I said, I knew that some of the television shows, or at least the ghost hunters, are supposed to use them, but I never heard of actual team using that sort of thing. Maybe I'm out of the fray though. I may not know. I may not be up on all the new stuff that's going on. I don't know.
A buddy of mine, Jamie, who used to be with the Lexington Paranormal Research Society, he actually builds a lot of his own paranormal equipment. He actually builds a device that does that exact same thing.
Oh, cool. That's cool. I may have to look into that. I probably use one of those myself then. It sounds like, okay. Well, maybe I'm just out of touch. I guess that happens. my students at school, they always tell me I'm out of touch. You know, I don't know about all the new stuff. I don't know. It's passing
Zach, by me. Zach, it's been a blast having you on. Tell everybody how they can keep up with Paranormal Road Trippers and how they can get any number of your books that are out there. Guys, I'm telling you right now, the Bigfoot Atlas and the UFO Atlas, this thing is a monster of a book. No pun intended. I mean, these things are very well put together, and they're not something that you would just find anywhere. You, trust me, when you see these things, they literally are loaded with information, very well done. And I mean, it's a heck of a book. Both of them are. And I was pretty impressed by them when I saw them.
Oh, if you're interested in a copy, they are available on Amazon, but I really don't suggest purchasing them through Amazon for a couple different reasons. Primarily because Amazon has a price. The price is a lot more on Amazon. If you actually go to my web, well, first off, facebook.com/paranormalroadtripper. Road Tripper is RoadTripper. facebook.com/paranormalroadtripper. That'll take you to my Facebook page. From there, you should be able to find links to my website, paranormalroadtripper.net. I have all my books for sale on there with a much more modest price than on Amazon. Not to mention, I sign them, you know, whenever I send them out from myself. That would, you would be purchasing them directly from me, cheaper price, and I sign them, and I've been known to throw in some goodies and things in there as well. But that would probably be the best place to hit up our online store if you're interested in those things. I'm actually in the process of opening a new exhibit of sorts in Somerset. It's coming this July. I'm calling it Paranormal Road Trippers Nightmare Gallery. And it is going to include a number of things that go bump in the night. I'm talking, we're going to have a lot of things that I've collected from travels. There are a number of objects. See, when you're a teacher and I go to these festivals and events and speaking, people come out of the woodwork with stories about haunted objects that they have that they no longer want. And I've gotten some good stories over the years. And I've gotten, believe it or not, people have a tendency to sort of dump these things on me. There's some pretty incredible things that are in this place. Some stuff that I can personally attest that has a lot of paranormal activity attached to it. My wife, she works late often. She used to work night shift, and I would always call her, and she'd answer her phone at work and say, "What's going on?" I'd say, "We've got another one." And she'd say, "Another what?" And I would tell her about the object that I had to pick up, and then she'd say, "Oh gosh, surely you're not bringing this into our house." And we made a deal that it could go in our crawl space, a lot of these things. And a lot of them have stayed there for now 5 or 6 years, weird things in our crawl space. You know, we hear some strange noises down there, but just some unusual stories out of these things. They're going to be involved in this nightmare gallery, but it's also going to have a whole lot of Bigfoot related things. Really, all those, this is what I was talking about earlier when I said I'm currently working on a project that's going to highlight a lot of the legends of South Central Kentucky. I've spent a lot of time putting together some exhibits that I think are, I'd like to think they're pretty special, that are going to highlight some of the lesser known creatures and stories that are said to come out of Kentucky. And there's a lot of them, the Birdman of Devil's Creek, the Keno Monster, the Bulberry Black thing. That's a kind of an interesting story down in Williamsburg. But there's all sorts. And me and my wife have been compiling these stories. We've brought things from all over. It's going to be kind of just a combination of all of our passions. So the UFO story from Stanford and beyond. We're really excited to open this thing. I don't know if I can stress that enough. We are really excited. It's coming in July in Somerset. All the details about it are going to be posted on my Facebook page on Paranormal Road Tripper, facebook.com/paranormalroadtripper. Come June, we're going to be putting some videos on there to kind of build a little bit of hype for the event. I promise it's going to be worth the time. If you can't make it out to our festivals where we sell some of the things we were talking about earlier, we're going to have all that for sale there at the museum as well. I say museum, it's going to be kind of a museum and exhibit. I'm calling it a gallery. It's going to be a gallery of the unusual, the unexplained, and the otherworldly. I'm very excited.
I'm excited for it too. I can't wait to check it out. And like I said, you know, It's going to be the place to come for the paranormal because you've already got the paranormal museum there. You'll have your place there. People can stop down there and check out Somerset. I think we're going to have to do a live event out there at somewhere in Somerset just to bring people in and make a weekend of it. They can check out our show, check out a bunch of other stuff around there, check you guys out, the museum. My goodness. It's
we're in the process of putting together, this is the first time I've ever told anybody about this. We're in the process of putting together, I don't want to call it a scavenger hunt per se, but I'm trying to come up with a great name for this, but something that's going to take people to a lot of the local legends. I mentioned Souls Chapel earlier, Short Creek, some of these other places around Pulaski County that are the Long Hollow Cave, some of which took place in the Hellier documentary, or some of them were featured in there. But we're going to kind of a thunder run. I don't know what we're going to call this, but it's going to be a scavenger hunt that if you come to the Nightmare Gallery, we'll give you a map and some GPS coordinates and invite people to have a little bit of fun. It'll probably take you a few hours to try to hit up a lot of these locations, and they'll take you to some interesting places. But we're hoping that it'll be something that'll create some interest in some of these stories and folklore. Like I said, it's our job to keep these stories alive. And that's my whole goal. So I tell my classroom all the time, it's our role to keep the legend alive and to pass it on to the next group. So I don't know. You all come on down. We'll have a desk set up and we can have an event or something. That'd be great.
Hey, so you had mentioned all the haunted items that people have given you and some of the stories you got. Have you ever thought about putting together a book of just that, just the haunted items and the stories that went behind them that people have given you? That actually would make a really good reading.
I hadn't really thought about that in my, I wrote two ghost books. The first one's called The Amateur's Guide to Ghost Hunting. The second one's called The Expert's Guide to Ghost Hunting. And there is a chapter in there that talks about where I started to collect a lot of these objects. But I haven't put the stories out there like that. That's fun. Half the process of putting together this exhibit is trying to create finding unusual ways to tell these stories, because I don't know. Me and my wife, we've traveled to a lot of Bigfoot museums, a lot of haunted museums, a lot of UFO, the Roswell UFO Museum. And all the time you go to these museums, and sometimes the presentation, telling the story, to me, the story is the thing. You know, sometimes even more than like the object itself is knowing the history, knowing the story. So we've been really trying to invent ways to tell the stories in unique ways. That will leave people, I don't know, there's something, the art of storytelling needs to be alive and well. And that's kind of our main goal with creating this place. So you'll see, we have some surprises up our sleeves. Like I said, awesome. I mentioned the little run that I was talking about, the scavenger run. That's the first time I've ever told anybody that we're kind of working on that. But we have some more surprises up our sleeve. We're wanting to make Somerset a destination, you know, some place where people can come, maybe get a hotel for the night and have a couple days of entertainment. So
next year, we're going to make that happen, because we did that in Atchison when we did the Sally House thing. They actually rolled out the red carpet for us. We had about 70, 80 people show up, and we did our live event in a haunted restaurant there. And then we turned around and they did tours of the Sally House for any of our members. They did a haunted trolley ride and cemetery tours. So people came there and they actually had a whole weekend set up. And I could see that happening in Somerset. I mean, between the little thing that you're planning on putting together, the scavenger hunt type thing, and between coming to your place and our show and the Paranormal Museum, we could really set up and do a weekend type event there that we haven't really been able to set up anywhere else other than Atchison. And I've been wanting to do a place like that. And Somerset would be the perfect location just because of all the paranormal mystique there. So I think this could happen.
That I'm all for it. We're in the process. We actually we're hoping to create a summer like outdoor movie series as well. It's something that we've kind of got coming down the pipe. We've got a big screen already set up. As I said, I'm giving out all my secrets. You have a way of pulling them out of it. But we have the means, a very large screen and projection and sound equipment. That's another thing that might be cool that we could feature for this event, is having an outdoor screening, put a couple movies I love a good lawn chair cinema. I'll just put it like that. So maybe.
Well, if you're going to give out your secrets, at least you're giving it out to about 100,000 people. So that's the way to give out your secrets.
Well, I'm telling you, I love that. Yeah. I'm excited. We ought to make an event, make a weekend of it next year or something. And because I think this summer we're just going to start opening, but we have some big plans down the line. So yeah, we ought to do some collaborating and
we'll do that. I can promise you we'll do something there next year because I'm already excited about it. My wheels are already turning. So, all right, Zach, thank you so much. ParanormalRoadTripper.net and Paranormal Road Tripper on Facebook. Look him up. Buy the books. You've heard the storytelling. His writing is even better than his storytelling. He's an English teacher. What do you expect? So go ahead, check out the stuff, learn a little bit about Somerset, get ready for this trip next year.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
All right, guys, that wraps it up for this week. Like I said, that's we're going to set something up there, I think. We'll get it all. We'll let him get all settled and in there, and we're going to have a blast.
Yeah. Sounds great. No, it does sound exciting. No, I'm just kidding.
You're so weird.
I know it. All right, guys, you all have a blessed week. We love you guys so much, and we will be talking to you next week.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa Welcome Bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.